Part 5. Sanctum Imperialis. Chapter 23. The Final Council. Lotara. She woke when the ship called to her. It didn't speak, exactly. It pleaded in a voice of metal under tension, waking her with protest of tormented steel. Lotara sat up in bed, hearing something of her name in the groaning of the Conqueror's bones.
Vox, she called. Bridge, this is Saren. Status report. Vox, damn it, establish bridge link. This is the captain. Status report.
The ship shuddered again, but the Vox stayed dead. It wasn't a gunnery shudder. It wasn't an impact shake. She knew her ship's tremors. It was yet more of the warp's pressure out there, mangling the hull as it tried to get in.
Lights,
she said into the darkness of her chamber. This achieved exactly as much as her attempts to activate the Vox.
Lights! Lights! Illumination! Oh, bloody hell!
Lotara didn't have the energy for this. She didn't have the energy for anything. She was skeletal with malnutrition and dehydration, and even this paltry anger threatened to leave her breathless. She hailed her attendant servitor with a weak wave of her hand.
Dress me, she commanded it. Uniform.
The servitor, who had once been Consul Officer 4th Class Elsabetta Rahem before her regrettable attempt at mutiny in the starvation riots last month, wasn't standing in its usual place by the sealed window. It was slumped against the wall, demotivated to use Mechanicum terminology, and to use Saren terminology, dead as shit. Lotara peered at it through the darkness. Half of its shaved head had merged with the iron wall. The thing's cranium was swollen, spread out, blood vessels threading into the dark metal. Judging by the expression on the servitor's face, Lotara had slept through its screaming. The captain wasn't sorry to have missed that, though she wondered just how long she'd been out and how deeply she'd been asleep to miss such a thing in her own quarters. The blast shield over her viewing window was up, letting in the useless unlight of the warp outside. It rippled, that non-light, those colours that never made anything any easier to see. It pooled and puddled and ran over the surfaces of her chambers. She'd sealed the window before she slept. She was certain of it.
Shipboard, Kron,
she called out, expecting no answer and getting what she expected. Nothing worked anymore. Nothing had worked for months.
Fine, I'll dress myself.
She reckoned she could do it without help. Probably. It would take a while, and she doubted she could lace up her boots with her shaking fingers, but... Lotara hauled herself out of bed and gave a weak laugh. She didn't need help getting dressed anyway. She'd slept in her uniform again. It was crumpled and dirty, but it was practically parade clean compared to the blood-stained rags many of the crew wore on duty these days. Lotara took one look at her bedside table, where her canteen stood half full, along with several foil-wrapped ration wafers, but her throat tightened at the sight. Despite her weakness, she wasn't hungry. Despite her thirst, she didn't think she could face swallowing even a mouthful of tepid water. The ship shivered again, and its grinding bones mumbled her name. The Conqueror wanted something from her. She couldn't guess what that might be. When it wasn't trying to please her by bringing back dead crew to haunt her, it was demanding she do something, without clarifying what. Lotara rose on unsteady legs and made her way to the door. She heard a scream outside, coming from deeper in the ship, but the corridor outside her chambers was empty. Not so long ago, that would have made her skin crawl. Now she rubbed her aching temples and started walking towards the rapid transit elevator. Khan was on the bridge. He stood by her command throne, up on the raised dais, beneath a swarm of malformed brass gargoyles that hadn't been there before. Lotara looked up at the hideous things, sculpted to cling from the ceiling beams, leering down at the bridge crew. Their childlike bodies were mangled together in a hive-like mass embrace, and their many mouths stood open to show rows of saw-blade teeth. They looked like they were ready to drag members of the bridge crew up to the ceiling in their greedy little hands, and from the bloodstains on their brass fangs, Lutara suspected that may have happened more than once already. They didn't move as she stared at them. Maybe they wouldn't move at all. She resisted the urge to look at Khan. He wouldn't say anything. He never did. Because he was dead, and he wasn't there. Instead, she ascended the dais, looking over the skeleton crew still operating on the bridge. Several hundred souls had toiled here at the Great Crusade's height. Attrition, war, time, and the axes of their own legion had winnowed that number down to threadbare dozens. Corpses lay across the deck where they'd fallen, while the most respectfully treated were piled in loose mounds against the chamber walls. The freshest of the dead were only a few days into their decay, ripening with discoloration, beginning to bloat, attracting fat, shiny flies from who knew where. Plenty of others were in states of deeper rot, slowly collapsing in on themselves, dry and sunken things like unearthed mummies. Lotara smelled it then. Really smelled what the Conqueror had become. The rank copper of blood was nothing new. It was a smell practically boiled into the warship's bones, but now it was coated in the spoiled meat stink of biological corruption. Almost everyone knew the scent of decaying animal flesh, and it was easy to read remembrance of prose about the reek of war. But something in the human genetic strain rebelled at the smell of rotting people. Lotara's weakened insides coiled up at the richness of that smell. She didn't just breathe it in, it seeped inside her. The smell was part of the ship, part of her uniform, part of her skin and hair, part of the blood that beat through her body. She had a faint fear she would carry this stink inside her for the rest of her life, just waiting to be acknowledged whenever she let herself take those deepest breaths. The oculus was open, looking out onto the choked sphere of terror. Pyrokinetic madness thrashed in orbit around the globe. Colours with no names danced over the faces of the surviving bridge crew. None of the crew acknowledged her. They didn't even seem to acknowledge each other, staying slouched or hunched at their consoles, looking up only in spurts of twitchy, tired unease. Lotara took her throne. No longer did she recline with her boots up on one armrest, as she had in her glory days. Now her diminished form sat crone-like in the chair's bulk.
"Why is the oculus unsealed?" she called.
In answer, one of the ship ratings transferred a spillage of data to her throne's projectors. The message that beamed into the air before her was from the War Master himself, which, Lotara suspected, meant it was from Argonis, and Horus may never have even seen the Order at all. There was no reason given for why all vessels were to cease closing their eyes to the warp, at least nothing past a screed of brief exhortations to seek the truth in the void's tides, and various other allusions Lotara wasn't sure she wanted to understand. She certainly wasn't going to meditate on the boiling insanity outside the window. Every sailor knew that to stare into the warp was to risk madness. And now the warp was here, buffeting the armada in orbit and curling its tendrils into the atmosphere of terror. Changing things. Warping things, one might say. It was literally the most honest way of describing it, after all. She could see faces out there in the waves. Not in the way groundlings could make out shapes in clouds, but faces. Actual faces. The hollow-socketed visages of men and women she knew. Crew members no longer with her. Legionaries lost in the crusade and the rebellion that followed. She saw Ivar Tobin, her first officer, laughing without eyes, screaming without a tongue, his face the size of the moon as it twisted in the boiling morass. Then he was gone. And honestly, had he ever been there at all? Replaced by an arcing surge of empiric energy, a lashing crescent that cleaved against several of the anchored ships and set the Conqueror shuddering again. Lotara shivered in sympathy with her warship.
"What word from the surface?" she called out,
and then added somewhat less hopefully,
Has there been any communication from the Primarch?
Not that he has been capable of speech for some time. Nevertheless, Hope forced the ludicrous question from her lips. Again, the remaining crew replied without words. Several of them keyed in commands at their stations, and a huge hollow projection of the Sanctum Imperialis flared into being in the air above the command deck. Runic signifiers showed the rough disposition of the War Master's forces. The Horde was mustering before the walls of the final fortress. The geography of the war's last front line was deceptively simple. That was good, because it was almost over, and Lutara was tired in every way it was possible to be tired. She ached to order the ship out of orbit, setting sail for the deep void and away from all this. She could do it, couldn't she? Just raise her voice and... The hololith screeched with visual static and realigned. She blinked and focused again on what lay before her. The scratchy view of the wastelands before the Delphic battlement showed hundreds of runic markers delineating warbands and regiments and groupings of the War Master's forces, a mess too disorganized for any cohesive identity. They mustered before the vast curtain wall surrounding the Sanctum Imperialis, encircling the Delphic battlement and the final fortress that it protected. The Sanctum Imperialis was void-shielded beyond mortal comprehension and machine-spirit cogitation. Lutara had casually tossed a few orbital volleys in that direction herself earlier on in the siege, out of frustrated curiosity. But it was weakest in the west. That's where the Horde mustered in greatest numbers. In the west, the Delphic Archway was the wall's most heavily defended location, and its principal point of vulnerability. There the fighting would be thickest, layered with defenders reinforcing the one grand opening in their final wall. There the sweat of the defenders' desperation would be at its bitterest, and there the blood would run deepest. Once the Horde overran the battlement, and they would, swiftly, Captain Sarin hardly needed a tactical advisor to see that, the Royal Ascension lay open. It was a kilometre-long avenue, steadily rising on stairs large enough to accommodate the tread of Titans, leading to... She watched it, shimmering on the hololith. There was the Eternity Gate, at the very end of the Royal Ascension, the doorway into the Emperor's castle. The Sanctum's walls couldn't be brought down. The gate could. For now, it stood open, facilitating the movement of soldiers and materiel from the Sanctum to the battlement. When the enemy broke through the battlement, though, then it would seal closed, denying the Horde. The final doorway. After they tore the Eternity Gate from its hinges, it would be done. This miserable war would be over at last. Lutara watched the simulations playing out, the runes dancing their logistical dances, playing out the final act of the Emperor's end. Some of the simulations took only hours to resolve to their inevitable conclusion. Several took between 1 and 3 days, and one outlier took 4. It didn't matter. The outcome never changed. Close now, she thought. So close. Out of the corner of her eye, she caught sight of Terra once more. It was something she tried to avoid, for every time she looked upon the cradle of humanity, she was confronted again by the fact it was dead. Not dying. Dead. Even with access to the Mechanicum's fragmented mastery of Dark Age atmospheric processors and terraforming machine cities, Terra was dead. There wasn't enough organic matter left to start a chain reaction of re-terraforming. Whole regions would be soaked in radiation for centuries to come. The last ocean, which had already been little more than a shrinking sea after the resource wars of the Age of Strife and the Emperor's unification, was now a jellied expanse of dust-thickened sludge. Horus's war had destroyed Terra's last dubious claims of self-sufficiency. Lutara had reviewed the figures and images herself on a subscreen, with the aid of a Mechanicum adept, noting the millions of underground fungal farms and algae reservations that no longer existed, scrubbed from existence on every continent by bombardment or the invading hosts, no longer providing even a beggar's portion of the sustenance required by Terra's teeming population. From the moment the Emperor launched the Great Crusade, the throne world had fed desperately off the Imperium's new worlds. It devoured their resources with the geared jaws of the Imperial war machine, placating the citizens with glories while draining them to feed its ceaseless expansion. But if the Imperium somehow survived the last days of this war, all pretense would be gone. The parasitic fever of Terra's malfunction would be laid bare. Terra would squat at the heart of its empire, a grey cancer feeding on sacrifice, drawing in food, water, iron, faith, hope, all of it in an endless suction to feed a planet that wouldn't admit its time was done. These were not pleasant thoughts. She started cycling through intercepted transmissions, using the controls in the arm of her throne to scroll through the last few hours' worth of intelligence, harvested from the surface by the Conqueror's Voxleech systems. One of them, among the latest, was marked by a screed of Chthonian runes that caught her eye. She keyed in the access code. The hololith flickered, flashed, changed, resolved. Now it gleamed an anemic blue, even less substantial, and within its misty layers, figures and faces formed. A great ring of figures comprising an ethereal conclave. It took Lotara several seconds to realize just what she was looking at. She knew many of these warriors, if not personally, then by sight and reputation. Fafnir Ran was there, as was Sigismund, both sparing precious minutes away from the defense of their respective bastions. They were ghosts of ghosts, hollowing into the gathering rather than being physically present. Others were slightly clearer. The crippled Captain Zephon stood with Captain Amit in a loose line of Blood Angels leaders. Several Imperial Fists and White Scars commanders stood nearby, among a cluster of several hundred Imperial Army officers. No one smiled. No jests were told. Everyone bore witness. In the gathering's very centre, the Primarch Sanguinius oversaw a shifting, evolving map of the inner palace. The image of the Sanctum Imperialis, Palatine District, glowed with unsteady stoicism at the hololith's heart. Lotara swore softly. They'd sliced into the very core of the Defender's transmissions. This had come from the keep, atop the Delphic battlement. It was the Bloody War Council at the last wall. She checked the archival data on her throne. It was scarcely half an hour old. Fascinated, she watched as the map refined itself through pitches and zooms. Closing in on the Palatine Ring, the embattled bastions surrounding the sanctum itself. Closing in further, splitting into cascading sub-images, bringing up the wastelands of rubble and corruption between the bastions, severing off and codifying embattled regions on the periphery, where significant Imperial forces still held out. And this was nothing of a bigger picture, barely a slice of a slice. How many millions of combatants were still fighting their own wars in the Outer Palace? And how many billions were spread across the rest of Terra, waging their own campaigns? The scale of such considerations was beyond her. Beyond anyone, except perhaps the cogitational minds of the Warmaster and Rogal Dorn. But she found her thoughts drifting often to those far from the final fortress, engaged in their own life-and-death battles. Every one of those wars mattered as much as the assault on the Delphic battlement, for every second they held out kept more of the Warmaster's forces from gathering at the final battle. This was Dorn's final gambit. The Delphic battlement was the Sanctum's curtain wall. If it fell, there was nothing left. The way was open for the Warmaster to stake his claim, to walk right up to the Eternity Gate. "Captain Ran," Sanguinius beckoned. The image of Fafnir Ran addressed the conclave as Bab Bastion flared an aggravated besieged orange on the projection table.
My Lord Dorne believes we can hold Bab for another 7 to 9 days, depending on variables that have no bearing at this council. He has charged me to answer your request, Lord Sanguinius. As matters stand, we cannot reinforce you. We are still encircled and cannot lift the siege.
Sanguinius nodded. Plainly, to Lotara's eyes, he'd expected no less.
Thank my brother for his candour, Captain Ran, and my thanks to you for your report.
My Lord Dorne further requested that if you are able to send reinforcements to us in the defence of Bab, that you do so at once, provided it does not endanger the Delphic battlement.
Sanguinius shook his head, his golden hair framing kindly, weary features.
Even with the forces garrisoned here, we number scarcely 70,000. Every soul is needed on the wall. Tell my brother so, and offer him my regrets.
In the Emperor's name,
Ran replied, and made the sign of the Aquila over his breastplate. His hololith flickered out. The mountain of the Astronomican gleamed a muted white with its temporary reprieve, but it was practically alone in its purity. The image of the Dark Angel, Corswain, was a scratchy and indistinct ghost of a thing, the connection savaged by distance. His news was no better for the defenders. They expected a renewal of the assault on their mountain fastness any hour now. Any diminishment of their thin forces would mean the loss of the Astronomican, reclaimed so recently and with such unlikely fortune.
Lord, Corswain said directly to Sanguinius, I will ask you nonetheless. Would you have us abandon the mountain and fight our way to you? If you order it, it shall be done.
Sanguinius shook his head at the Dark Angel's offer. No, Paladin. Hold the Astronomican at all costs. We need the beacon relit, for by your light will the 13th Legion find its way home. Corswain gave a scratchy reply, his tone hesitant.
Even if Lord Gilliman and the 13th reach the system's edge this very hour, the Ultramarines would be too late to aid you.
Though we will fall here, nephew, reinforcements may yet arrive in time to aid the rest of you, ensnared in your own wars. If we are foremost in your thoughts, then light the beacon to honour our memory. There could be no more fitting funeral fire.
Lotara swallowed at the resolve in the great angel's voice, at the acceptance. How noble he sounded, even in defeat. Next was the Kishar Colosseum, endlessly reinforced by Rogal Dorne and used to house a tide of refugees from across the inner palace. On the map it gleamed a hopeless red. The Imperial Army colonel overseeing its defences gave his negative report while a field medic was bandaging his face. They expected to lose the last of their held ground by sunset tomorrow. Sanguinius gestured to another officer, a human commanding the Sarku Lyat Concourse and its several hundred capillary avenues. Sarku Lyat was a district once home to millions of souls, fortunate and wealthy enough to live within the inner palace. Now it throbbed black, with the topographic scans of its surrounding landscape riven by the craters of unmatched devastation. It hadn't been orbital bombardment that annihilated the Sarku Lyat district. It was the death of one of Horus's warships from before the ultimate wall even fell. Lotara had watched it die, blasted from the sky. The 15th Legion battleship Royal Deshret had plunged through the atmosphere, picked apart by the palace's defensive aegis to no effect, smashing down and ending almost 20 million lives in the time it took to blink. More earthquakes, more dust, more of the blinding and deafening same. Another punctuation mark in the death of the planet. The army officer in charge of the fighting around Sarku Lyat's ruins couldn't maintain a clean vox link to the council. She sent only a brief text missive, citing that her forces had no way of leaving their entrenchments and reaching the sanctum. And on it went, Every bastion, every sector, every district of the inner palace was under siege, at the heart of their own wars. Most couldn't even muster a Voxlink at all, and those that could begged for aid that couldn't come. The Sanctum had no way of answering any of their increasingly desperate calls for reinforcement. The defenders were locked into place. The board was set for the last moves of the game. As she stared at them, wondering why they were there, she asked herself the very same thing. Why was she here? Why were any of them here? Why had she followed Horus and Angron into this war? Ah, but it had all seemed so righteous at the time. It had all seemed so necessary. World after world heaving with unfair taxation, the Emperor losing control over the Great Crusade as adepts and ministers and bureaucrats began to assume mantles of leadership across the emerging Imperium. Not that Lotara or her Primarch cared for the suffering worlds, but Horus had. Horus was the best of them all. She was content being an instrument of war. Her place was to serve, to hunt, to kill. She was a blade to be wielded by righteous hands, and no hands were more righteous than the War Master's. Then the whispers had begun. Peace became more than a laughably distant goal at the end of the Great Crusade. It became a distinct possibility, then an inevitability. Something that the humans serving in the expeditionary fleets would actually live to see. What then of the Legiones Astartes? What use was the perfect warrior in an age of peace? There was talk of culling, of execution, even of extermination. The very warriors that built the Imperium with bolt gun and blade, the soldiers Lotara had served alongside for all her adult life, grew restless and uneasy. Word filtered through the Crusade's scattered fleets. Word of Terran plans, about betrayals, about treacheries whose wheels were already in motion. Word of weaknesses bred into the gene seed. Word of a new, peaceful age, requiring no soldiers, no warriors, no sailors in the stars. Then what of the mortals that fought by these warriors' sides? Were they too stained? Coloured by association? Would they be rewarded for their conquest of the galaxy? Or pastured off to exile worlds, there to die out in the void-black quiet as the Imperium's secret shame over its bloody-handed past? Would they be destroyed upon returning to Terra? Blasted out of the throne world's skies as their ships returned to humanity's cradle? A similar dissolution had happened before. It was in the archives. The armies of unification, the Thunder Warriors, the hosts that had conquered Terra in the Emperor's name, dead, gone, slaughtered at the Emperor's word as reward for their service to his crown. Reports of genetic instability in the Proto-Astartes conflicted with analyses that they had been executed en masse by the 10,000, the Emperor's own custodians. No one knew what to believe about any of this. Lotara certainly didn't. And the Emperor, retired to Terra, refused to enlighten any of those that begged him for answers. To their pleas for the truth, he returned only silence. Even when the War Master beseeched him for answers, even his own son earned only cold silence. What kind of man was ruling over them? What kind of king abandoned his subjects instead of guiding them with his rule? For some, the years of these whispered pressures and outlandish accusations was enough. Lotara hadn't needed much convincing, truth be told. Taxations and plots of extermination and whatever else, all of it had meant little to her. The truth that Lotara could admit to herself as she sat with her back to the wall, struggling to breathe in the tainted air of her twisted warship, was that she'd sailed with the War Master because she wanted to. When Angron had declared for Horus, committing his legion against the Emperor, Lotara swallowed her quiet doubts without much strife. What was she going to do? praise the name of a distant monarch and turn her back on the men and women she'd bled alongside for her entire life? Abandon command of her beloved conqueror for the pathetic nobility of swearing her allegiance to a failed emperor? Horus was the Golden One, the General of Generals, the War Master of the Imperium. Serving him was an honour, and to be trusted by him with a rank such as hers was a pleasure that defied words. For some, even that would be enough. But Lotara chose to sail with his forces because her life was with them. She lived and breathed for the warriors of the World Eaters' Legion. For years she'd bled alongside them. She'd guided them from orbit and laid waste to the worlds that defied them. She'd devoted her life to their principles and purpose. She respected them. She loved them. And she thrived in the respect they accorded her. More than anything else, she trusted them. Them. Not the Emperor. She trusted Khan and Kargos and Angron and Horus himself. She trusted her own crew and the other captains in her fleet. And if she were to die, let her die fighting beside those she loved and trusted. No finer fate than that, surely. Surely, she thought with a weak exhalation. Unconvincing, even in the privacy of her own threadbare thoughts. Surely. Terra turned out there, a brown and grey jewel of such dubious value now. Already dead, already choked by the poison of ambition, yet the warped void still clutched at the globe, as if there was anything left to strangle. Her mind was drifting, a disassociation brought on by her weakness and dehydration. She knew it well by now. Lotara swallowed through the thickness of her throat and forced her attention back to the hololith. At the end of the ad hoc council, there was no grand speech to motivate them. Sanguinius ordered the officers out onto the wall to return to their forces. Maybe months ago these human defenders might have emanated an aura of unease, or even had the consumptive marks of fear showing on their faces. But the war had bleached them of such things. These were the survivors, the fortunate ones, the ones that had endured all else. They had seen and survived too much to shake in their boots now that their back was to the final wall. Something stirred inside her. Something atrophied and slow, entombed in the silty hole where her conscience used to be. It should be pathetic, seeing them like this. They should stink of desperation, trapped in their last besieged fortresses, all of them encircled by the War Master's horde, all of them slowly starving. It should be hilarious, listening to them beg each other for reinforcements that couldn't come. But it's not. How brave they looked, driven over the edge of exhaustion, yet still standing. Pressed back and back, forced to the very last walls, ready to stand and die for what they believed in. It didn't matter that the empire they were fighting for was a construct of lies and occluded truths. They'd endured half a year of horror and grinding onslaught and planetary death in the name of loyalty. In that light, even their naivety was more tragic than laughable. She had the sudden fiercest urge to be there with them, those exhausted, emaciated, doomed bastards. She wanted to stand with them and... And what? It's too late for regrets now. Lotara shivered, and if the discomfort didn't quite pass, it at least faded. She found herself looking about for Khan, but he was nowhere to be seen. The fleet-wide Vox came to life a moment later, needing to awaken through protracted birth cries of static. The voice of Horus Lupercal crackled across the Conqueror's Bridge, as it echoed across every command deck in the Armada. He spoke only 6 words, but for his loyal forces, it was the most they'd heard from the War Master in months.
The final assault begins at dawn.